Aunt Florence and the Green Woodpecker. I feel jolly sorry for 'em, said William thoughtfully. They have such a rotten time. Hoodoo, said Ginger indistinctly through a mouthful of roast chestnut. Grown-ups, said William. Just think of the dull things they eat and the dull things they do, going into towns and looking at shops. Well, it's their own faults, said Douglas, manoeuvring a chestnut out of the fire with a stick, taking it up in his fingers and dropping it with a yell.
What do you expect? Said Henry unsympathetically. Roasted chestnuts are naturally hot.
Roasted moose, William corrected him.
Roasted moose, agreed Henry,
remembering their role of Red Indians. The four were sitting around a fire they'd made in the wood, roasting chestnuts and pretending to be a tribe of Red Indian braves under the leadership of Hawkeye, who was, of course, William. "'Course they can't help it, grown-ups,' said William, "'and that's why I feel so sorry for 'em. I'd like to do something for 'em.
"'Perhaps they like being dull,' suggested Henry tentatively.
"'They can't,' said William. "'No one can like being dull.' Some of them don't deserve a good time. But tell you what about us having a society for giving decent grown-ups a good time?
I don't know, said Ginger. They're always so ungrateful when you do anything for them.
Yes, agreed Douglas in a heartfelt tone. That time I tried to clean the chimney because the sweep didn't turn up, they were all mad at me instead of being grateful. They're all like that, and I don't see how we can change them.
Well, what do we do now? Said Henry. We finished the chestnuts, the moose. Shall we go and have a hunt for old Fat Face?
Recently, a relation had presented the outlaw's ancient enemy, Hubert Lane, with an elaborate Red Indian suit, and on the strength of this, he had organised his gang into a band of braves under his leadership, taking the name Lion Face. The outlaws, however, referred to him in this role as Fat Face. No, said William. No, I'm tired of chasing old Fat Face. He never does anything but run away. And even then, he's so easy to catch that it isn't any fun.
What do we do then?
The church clock struck one. Time for lunch, said Douglas. We'll think of something this afternoon. William had known for some time, of course, that Aunt Florence was coming to stay at his home. But he'd forgotten she was arriving this morning. Aunt's visits were one of life's necessary evils, and Aunt Florence seemed, at first, just like any other aunt. She was thin and short-sighted and absent-minded, and wore the style of hairdressing and coat and skirt that William had come to associate with aunts. But immediately after lunch, William realised she was different, for she took out her purse and handed him 2 half-crowns.
"'A little tip for you, dear boy,'
she said with her bright aunt's smile.
"'I'm sure you'll find some good use for it.'
Normally, the thought of the tip hung over the whole visit, imparting to it a nerve-wracking atmosphere of mingled hope and fear. It was tacitly understood that the precise amount would depend on his behaviour, that he was expected to earn it by excessive politeness and an almost impossible perfection of deportment. That an aunt should deliberately put an end to this painful state of suspense by giving her tip on arrival instead of on departure was unprecedented, and it touched William deeply. Moreover, it focused his attention upon her. He felt he'd like to express his gratitude to her in some tangible form. At first, there didn't seem to be any way in which he could do this. They had few, if any, interests in common. For Aunt Florence was one of those bird enthusiasts for whom William had little sympathy. She had a little bird diary in which she noted down all her observations. She imitated the notes of birds in a shrill falsetto. She even tried to interest William in it.
"The bird I particularly want to find, William," she said earnestly, "is a green woodpecker. It makes a noise like this."
She opened her mouth and emitted a shrill, short peal of laughter.
Curious, isn't it? If ever you hear its note, do let me know. I've been trying to find one for years. It will be such a joy to me to find one here and to record the fact in my diary.
Poor old thing, said William to his outlaws after lunch. "She has a jolly rotten time. Nothing but birds and things like that." He emitted an exaggerated imitation of the green woodpecker call as rendered by Aunt Florence. "I bet if someone took the trouble to give her a jolly good time, she'd enjoy it. I think we should start on her. She deserves it. She was jolly decent about that tip."
"Well, I don't see how you're going to do it," objected Ginger.
"I don't either, just at present," admitted William, "because she's just going about with my mother all the time, and I know it wouldn't be any good trying to make my mother jolly."
After tea, he rejoined them in a state of great excitement. "My mother's got a cold," he said breathlessly, "and she's going to stay in bed tomorrow, so my aunt'll be by herself. I bet we can give her a jolly good time if she's by herself. She deserves it."
The next morning, Aunt Florence looked up from her newspaper.
"I thought I'd go down to Hadley and look at the shops this morning, William," she said brightly. "Such a shame your dear mother can't come with me."
He looked at her pityingly, wondering yet again why grown-ups endured such agonies of boredom when they might be doing something really interesting. "I can come along with you," he said.
"Oh, very well, dear. That's very nice of you."
She chattered brightly as they walked down the road.
"Of course, the flycatcher comes back later than most of the birds, and unlike many of the others, he uses his old nest. The green woodpecker, the one I was telling you about, the one I'm so anxious to see, frequents open country as a rule, rather than woodlands, and..."
She stopped. William was turning from the road into a side lane.
"Oh, surely this isn't the way to Hadley, dear boy?"
Yes, it is," said William, assuring himself that everywhere was the way to Hadley, in the sense that you could get to Hadley from it.
"Well, anyway, it's very pleasant. Quite a bird sanctuary, I've no doubt. Oh, I might even see a green woodpecker here."
They walked down the path to a little clearing where Ginger, Henry and Douglas were waiting for them.
"Oh, dear, dear," said Aunt Florence. "Who are these?"
They're just friends of mine," explained William. "We thought perhaps you'd like to have a game of Red Indians with us, instead of going into Hadley." For a moment, Aunt Florence looked slightly taken aback, but it was, after all, a compliment to be asked to play with the dear children.
"Well, yes, dear, for a few minutes, perhaps. How do you play the game, dear boys?"
Well, explained William, "this bush is our wigwam, and we are four braves, and you can start by being our squaw. We're going out hunting now, and you're staying here to look after the wigwam and be ready to cook the moose what we bring home."
"Oh, I see," said Aunt Florence brightly. "I'll sit here on this tree stump and look after the wigwam. I may, of course, with luck, see a green woodpecker."
William sighed. It was going to be no easy task to educate Aunt Florence to a sense of true values.
"How long will we leave her there?" said Ginger, when they were out of earshot. "Shall we go and hunt old Fatface?"
No, said William. "No, we don't want to leave her too long being a squaw, in case she gets tired of it. We'll go back in a minute and fetch her, and take her out hunting with us. And I bet she'll get so excited with it she'll never want to look at a bird or a shop again."
But when they returned to the wigwam, Aunt Florence had disappeared, and on the tree stump where she'd been sitting was a piece of paper on which was written, "We've captured your squaw, Yah, Lion Face." The outlaws stared at it in consternation. Where could Hubert Lane and his band of braves have carried her off to?
I bet they wouldn't dare keep her in the wood, because they'd know we'd find her and jolly well bash them up. I bet he's taken her to his house.
And there, 2 minutes later, through the drawing-room window of Hubert Lane's house, they saw Aunt Florence engaged in polite conversation with Hubert's mother. She had taken for granted that her capture was part of the game, and was pleased to accept Mrs. Lane's invitation to lunch, offered at Hubert's earnest request. And a message to that effect had been sent to the Browns' house. William and the outlaws cautiously tried the gate. It was bolted. Hubert and his gang appeared from the side of the house.
"If you climb over,"
threatened Hubert, grinning derisively, but keeping a safe distance,
"if you climb over, I'll send him after you."
He pointed to the Lane's gardener at the other end of the lawn. He was a large, muscular man, for whom the outlaws had a deep respect born of bitter experience.
Well, you give us our squaw back, demanded William ferociously.
No, we jolly well won't, said Hubert. She's ours now. She belongs to our tribe. We've captured her.
Well, she's not going to have lunch with you, said William, because she's staying with us and she's coming home to lunch. They're expecting her.
She sent a message to say she's having it with us, jeered Hubert. Yaboo, your old arm belonging to our tribe. How'd you like that?
Well, we've got a message for her, said William desperately. It's an important one. You'll have to let us come to her if we've got an important message.
No, I jolly well won't, said Hubert.
All right, said William. We'll do without. And William and the outlaws began to yell, Aunt Florence! Aunt Florence! At the tops of their voices. But the Hubert Lanites began to shout too, drowning the words in a wild, indistinguishable hubbub.
Oh, it's just the children playing in the garden, explained Mrs. Lane, in answer to Aunt Florence's startled look. Oh, the dear children, murmured Aunt Florence, so high-spirited and light-hearted, such joie de vivre.
There was the sound of a gong, and Hubert and his gang vanished into the house. The outlaws discussed the situation in whispers. There was no doubt at all in any of their minds that they would be disgraced forever if their captured squaw broke bread in the rival chieftain's household.
Look, said Ginger, they're going into the dining room. I can see them.
And then, suddenly, William had an idea. Crouching down behind the hedge, he uttered the same high-pitched laugh that had been Aunt Florence's rendering of the note of the green woodpecker. Aunt Florence, in the act of raising a piece of her bread roll to her lips, suddenly froze. The note was repeated. Aunt Florence rose from her seat.
Do you mind if I step out into the garden? She murmured. I thought I heard... I won't be a moment.
The sound seemed to come from the road. She went to the gate. The sound came again.
Yes, it definitely came from down the road now.
There were two boys in the road. They looked rather like the boys she'd been playing Red Indians with, but she couldn't be sure.
Have you boys happened to notice a sort of green bird about here?
Yes, said Douglas. Yes, I saw a green bird only a minute ago in the hedge, down there.
He pointed down the road in the direction of William's home. The note was repeated. It was unmistakable, and it seemed to come from further off now. Forgetting everything else in the world, she opened the gate and set off down the road in the direction of the sound. The note drew her on further down the road, and at last into a garden which she entered rather timidly, and then to her surprise recognised as her host's garden. The note seemed to draw her along the path to the door, and then stopped. While she stood waiting uncertainly, Ethel came out and said,
Ah, lunch is ready, Aunt.
The woodpecker must have flown away. Its note had ceased entirely. It was disappointing, but she'd heard it quite clearly, and once or twice she could have sworn she'd seen a flutter of something in the hedge. She entered the dining room and sat down at the table. William was its only other occupant.
Have you had a nice morning, dear?
She said in her bright aunt's voice.
Yes, thank you, said William.
Oh, but, oh dear me, she said. I was having lunch at the Lane's house, wasn't I?
Ethel came in with a plate of chops.
Didn't I send a message that I wouldn't be in to lunch?
Yes, you did, aunt, said Ethel. But then you sent another message that you would. William's friend Ginger brought it.
Aunt Florence knitted her brows.
Did I? Oh, I suppose I must have done. It's been such a confusing sort of morning. Tell me, dear boy,
she turned to William,
did you hear that note I was telling you about this morning? The green woodpecker's note?
Yes, he said, reaching for a second chop. Yes, I did sort of hear that noise.
So did I, dear boy, said Aunt Florence triumphantly. And what's more, I'm almost sure I saw it.
Half an hour later, William met the other outlaws in the old barn.
"It's all right," he said wearily. "It's all right. She didn't go back to the Lane's house, and she's going home tomorrow, so it's all right. But I'm jolly well never going to try to give a grown-up a good time again as long as I live. They don't know what to do with it when you do give it 'em." Meanwhile, in her bedroom, Aunt Florence was wrestling with her conscience over her bird diary. At last, she wrote, "Distinctly heard note of green woodpecker. Think I saw it, but, owing to short-sightedness, cannot be quite sure."